And lay that on the jury. The prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
This edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. You're right, it does look different over there. We moved the monitor and it doesn't look right. But anyway,
looks like a piece of equipment was ripped out and taken away.
Wow, it just threw me off my game there as I was sitting there. But welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us as we really tear apart the news and news headlines and what's hiding behind the headlines. It's interesting that, we've got two websites. Please bookmark the websites, HagmanReport.com and HagmanandHagman.com. Please bookmark those websites. Check HagmanReport.com on a daily basis, Hagman and the Hagman for the show itself, but Hagman Report for the run-up to the show. John Robertson did a great job posting what's up for this week. Subject to change, of course, as needed, and as usual. And also a couple of just housekeeping issues. There's a number of new videos up. Videos from, for example, Stuart Rhodes, edited with some pertinent images up from our interview last week, is up there, as well as a couple of other videos, as well as one I did. I just pressed the OK button on that right before showtime. My message to men, and you know, if you're a snowflake and if you're a progressive liberal, if you're demented in that fashion, then I would not recommend you watch it. Also, I was on Alex Jones earlier today talking about the larger issues of Pedogate and what we've been hearing that is coming down the pike, so I'd urge everyone to find that video on Infowars.com. Portions of the nice broadcast brought to you by ProFlowers, ProFlowers.com. I'll tell you, all you have to do is go to ProFlowers.com or go to our website, go to HagmanReport.com and click on the banner that takes you right to ProFlowers. We have a unique URL there, and there you can select your product, your beautiful flowers, your gift, whatever it might be. Oh, do it upright for Valentine's Day. And also enter the code Hagman, proflowers.com. Click on the microphone, type in Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N. But, Joe, the Super Bowl, I guess that's the news, right? That was the news of yesterday.
Yeah, it was a interesting game. Over 111 million people watched, the halftime show.
Heads were exploding, by the way, over that.
The halftime show was interesting. Lady Gaga. There was some interesting symbolism there. Gonz Shamirna did a great breakdown.
Of the halftime show?
Yes, adding a lot of past narratives and halftime show information that added to the breakdown of this last Lady Gaga yesterday's halftime show. And it was a good game. A lot of
you know,
surprised.
Joe, I got to tell you, I'm very careful now who I go to with respect to halftime analyses, or you know, analyses of the various things like halftime shows and Olympic shows. I'm very, very careful because it's very complex. But that you're right.
And he made distinctions. Right. He said, you know, to watch as many of the breakdown videos as you can, because some people are Christian, some are not.
Right.
People disagree on differing points of the analysis, and to absorb as much as you can of people breaking it down. And I would say that's pretty good. There was a lot of stuff going on last night in the halftime show that I didn't even really notice at first. I was trying not to pay attention to the halftime show. But when you take a look back at it and what people, how they're analyzing it, it's very spooky.
Yeah. I didn't watch any of it. I was on with Dave Hodges last night as well.
Yeah, that worked out nice.
Yeah, I didn't. No, I was on with Dave last night, and we spoke about just a number of issues. It was a good show as well. But, this morning when I got in the office, I was looking at different forums and websites, and the progressive liberal Democrats, if that's, I hate to call them Democrats because they're really not. They're we'll just call them Marxist-Leninist, communist people. Their heads were just exploding. Oh my gosh, how could this be? You know, 2017 starting out bad already, and it just all because of their animus towards Trump. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's
there's a few storylines
there. All about
one is I think we talked about it last week. Tom Brady is friends with Donald Trump. Tom Brady being the quarterback for the New England Patriots, as well as the head coach Bill Belichick. And just for that reason alone, yeah. The left wanted the Patriots to lose. There was backlash against Lady Gaga for not saying or turning the halftime show politicizing the halftime show and saying anything bad about Donald Trump. And then,
how would that worked out if Obama was in there? Yeah. Gee, you know?
And then there was a Bill O'Reilly Super Bowl interview where Trump picked the Patriots to win by 8 points. So the country rallied behind the Falcons to show their disdain for Trump, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And not really, it doesn't.
But. Well, I mean, it makes sense to the mentally incompetent, and I mean that. The more I look at this, the more I look at the landscape, the more I realize that these people that we're dealing with here, that those who want to overthrow this country are, in my view, psychotic. I mean, that's, you know, look, I don't, and this was pointed out many times, you know, I'm no doctor. No, I can't make diagnosis. Of course not. Idiots.
You know, it's interesting.
You know, shut up. But I think they're psychotic. All right.
What's different from this anti-Trump movement? Well, there's a lot of difference from the anti-Trump movement, from the anti-Obama movement, that a lot of the people on the left would have said that the birthers and the Tea Party people wanted the same thing, even though that wasn't something that was, I mean, there was no violence, there was no calls for violence, there were calls for impeachment and whatnot, but that was based on, you know, the natural born citizen clause. But it's funny how it's reverse what it was 8 years ago.
Oh yeah. And how far down the bowl have we swirled in the last 8 years? And that's what this is all about, in my view. Anyway, so all right. I just want to let people know when we're talking about these illegals in this country, that's the big issue. You know, in Los Angeles alone, 95% of some 1,500 outstanding warrants for homicides are for illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, people in this country illegally. About 67% of the 17,000 outstanding fugitive felony warrants are for illegal aliens. Think about that. There are over 400,000 at the moment unaccounted for illegal alien criminals with outstanding deportation orders in Los Angeles. At least 1/4 of these are hardcore criminals. It's about 100,000. And 80 to 100,000 illegal aliens who have been convicted of serious crimes are walking the streets right now. Based on studies, they will commit an average of 13 serious crimes per perpetrator. Just think about that and let that soak in. And, so let's all sing Kumbaya and embrace one another, right? And say, oh, everything's good. We welcome everyone. Everyone, you know, there are no illegals. I just don't understand that. And people may say, well, that's pretty hateful to say. No, that's factual. You've got to understand, I think people have to understand that violent crime and drug, specifically violent crime, is prevalent among illegal aliens and people in this country. Over 25% of today's federal prison population are illegal aliens. Think about that. A quarter we're housing or feeding. Why not send them back to where they came from? In some other areas of the country, 12% of felonies, 25% of burglaries, 34% of thefts are committed by illegal aliens.
That's a question. I mean, if you're an illegal alien, you commit a violent crime, should you be jailed for the length of your sentence and then deported, or should you be sent to jail in your own country? A lot of people...
Why should we house them here?
Well, a lot of people are of the mindset if you commit a crime here, you do your time.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of that...
If they're not...
Not with the illegals, but the... you know, the quotas on the prison systems. You know, these huge prison populations, we have the most people in jail per capita of any nation.
Yeah.
And we have quotas, you know.
See, a lot of that's for drugs. Now, I have a real problem with the DEA, with the Drug Enforcement Administration. I believe that that's one agency of this government that should be banished completely, 100%. I think that the war on, here's an issue that I've got. And I think somebody from the American Thinker had just written an article about this, or maybe it was Mike Adams, but, the war against drugs is a joke, obviously. But the DEA is going after doctors who are prescribing painkillers to children with cancer, terminal cancer. Now think about this for a second. Here's a child with terminal cancer, and the doctor is afraid to prescribe that child with painkillers because you know why? That child just might become dependent upon the painkillers. Are you kidding me?
Well, obviously, with life-threatening illnesses such as cancer, that's a different story.
But what kind of crap thinking is that? So get rid of these people. Those people who write those laws, as far as I'm concerned, I hope to God, if they should get cancer, that somebody ties a painkiller to a fishing line and just pulls it as they're suffering from that terminal cancer and just pulls it across the floor and make them crawl for it. And just when they just about reach it for that relief that they need from their terminal cancer that's racking their body, pull it a little more. And then those people will get what they deserve, in my view. Making children suffer, making the invalid suffer, making the impaired and infirm suffer. That's wrong.
No, but, you know, the rampant abuse and the number of overdoses that continue to pop up, they being the government, feel the need to over-regulate.
So, that's why they've got a heroin epidemic among the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dirty little secret. They don't tell you. It's not that, I understand the dangers of drugs. I fully understand that. But what I'm saying to you, and to everyone out there, is when you look at what the DEA does and how they're in the faces of the doctors today and how they are saying, oh, that's you can't prescribe medication because, or if you overprescribe, you could lose your license or whatever. And I had experience with the diversionary unit of the DEA back in the 1990s with respect to some con cases we were working in, and they were looking at the number of amount of painkillers to various patients. And this guy, remember this guy, we call him Shish Kebab. The reason, of course, he fell off of a roof and landed on a fence post. He lived, except that he was impaled by the fence post. Now, how bad does your luck have to be not to do this not once, but twice? Happened to him twice. Well, you got to understand, this guy was, seriously, I'm not kidding around. I mean, this is a legitimate.
He fell on a fence post.
Twice. Two different locations. And I thought somebody was just spoofing me really bad. And his first name was Robert, so we called him Shish Kebab. But he was okay with that. But seriously, it's a true story. I don't know why I'm laughing except to say it. It just seems funny. But anyway, look. For him, I mean, his insides were twisted all around, back and forth, and he relied on pain medication. It just shut him off. He's a middle class guy, turned to heroin. So I don't know.
Happens a lot. I don't know how many people saw this today. You know, we've been talking a lot on this show about the liberal insanity and the hypocrisy of the left. There's a interesting. You know, interesting video. Maxine Waters, she reiterated calls for President Trump's impeachment during House Democrats' Monday morning press conference. When she was asked a question about whether she, when pressed about stating why would she call for the president's impeachment only a month into his term, she gave a half coherent, half incoherent statement. And you should hear some of what she said. She starts off by answering the reporter saying, I have not called for his impeachment. The statement I made was a statement in response to a question and pleas that I'm getting from many citizens across the country. What are we going to do? She then began to embark on a lengthy rant devoid of any semblance of traditional grammatical structure. This is what she said. How can a president who is acting in the manner that he is acting, whether he is talking about the travel ban or the way he is talking about Muslims, or whether he's talking about his relationship to Putin and the Kremlin, knowing that they hacked our DCCC and the DNC, knowing that he's responsible for supplying the bombs that killed innocent children and families in Aleppo, the fact that he is wrapping his arms around Putin while Putin is continuing to advance into Korea, I think he's leading himself into that kind, the word's a half, it's cut in half, kind of position where folks began to ask, what are we going to do? The answer is going to eventually be, we got to do something about him, she continued.
Well,
but what is she talking about? He's responsible for he's knowingly responsible for supplying the bombs that killed innocent children and families in Aleppo. Where were any of these people from the Arab Spring?
Oh, of course.
To the arming of Syrian rebels that led to the massacre of hundreds of thousands of people. But now that he's president, they turn around and say he's supplying bombs that killed children and families in Aleppo. And she goes on to say a lot more, which even the article points out is very incoherent. She ended by saying, we cannot continue to have a president who is acting in this manner. It is dangerous to the United States of America.
Acting in what manner? What are you talking about? Getting things done? Look, I'm not going to defend Trump when he's wrong. Certainly, I'm not going to do that. But acting in what manner?
No,
what manner is she talking about?
Continues to be the narrative of the narcissistic, brain-dead left. I don't know what other way to put it.
Well, and there it is. And that's just the way it is. You know, another issue over the last several months, and we've been talking about the weird obsession some people have about fake news. Or I shouldn't say weird obsession, over fake news. Take the election results that were put in with fake news, for example. Focusing on fake news as a problem in and of itself was not only and not merely pointless, but it did have a point. It does have a point, I believe. It has and is quickly morphing into calls for censorship, and that's the objective of fake news. The censorship power would be in the hands of whoever got to define what fake news is. Thus, it was very, I guess we'd expect this to see China and Iran quickly starting to use fake news as an excuse to crack down on the dissent online.
But China already does that. Maybe not under the guise of fake news, but I mean, they'll just come right out and say we're not. Like the inauguration is a great example of that. They banned live streaming of the inauguration, as well as instructed websites that they were not allowed to have an inauguration story on the top of their news stations. Well, I mean, they come right out and say what they want to ban and why they want to ban it in China.
Yeah, look at it here in the United States, and I understand that in China. I understand that whole concept of censorship. But here,
I guess I'm saying they don't need fake news.
Well, no, the government regulates the news, but here there are a few people who want to regulate the news, and we had said this before. We had sounded the alarm bells on this before. There are a number of people here who are focused on fake news, and it must be stopped. It's got to be stopped. The latest to step in with a suggestion is MSNBC through their chief legal correspondent, Ari Melber, who is suggesting that fake news can be regulated by the FTC in the same way he goes after fraudulent advertisers who fake websites pretending to be impartial news sites, talking up the waters of whatever it might be. But in this case, Melber's idea is exquisitely framed to make it sound like a good idea to some. Kind of like you can't yell fire, but even in a crowded theater, unless there's a fire, of course, but that's kind of the approach. Now, some might say, well, wait a minute, it's a good thing to regulate fake news. Okay, if you're stupid, I'll just say this, I'll turn over to you. If you're stupid enough to believe that, you know, the aliens landed on the White House lawn and some reptilian got out with Elvis Presley and you know, sacrificed the chicken to Hillary Clinton, then that's on you.
Well, this is a good example of a story that is a continuation of a story that came out at the end of last week that did not get a lot of coverage. How do you fight fake news when it is created by a government agency for the purpose of continuing and expanding a narrative? This time, global warming. This latest article from the Daily Mail says how world leaders have been duped into investing billions over manipulated global warming data. The main story here that came out last week was NOAA, America's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, broke its own rules and manipulated massive amounts of global warming data that never existed.
That's fake news.
Exactly. And look at the effects of this. They say how world leaders were duped into investing billions over manipulated global warming data. And all the societal guilt on, oh, you need to lower your carbon footprint and, you know, we're going to all be underwater in 3 years if we continue on this pace. All of it was manipulation. All the numbers that NOAA used, which scientists then used as a defense for global warming, were faked.
Well, we know about this. It's my contention that when you start regulating content, then you've got pure censorship. When you start regulating, when the government says you cannot say this,
right? But okay. What happens when anti-global warming news is, you know, labeled fake news? Is, you know,
very much yes. They, and that speaks to my point. I think we all understand that there are sources out there who through trust can be relied upon, through experience can be relied upon. Certainly the corporate media, including but not limited to MSNBC, this Ari Melber, who's saying, well, we need to regulate fake news, to me is not one that can be relied upon, especially when the likes of Chris Matthews and Rachel Maddow get out there and spew out their venomous tripe about their communist heroes. But having said that, to regulate fake news sounds very laudable if that was possible. Oh, it sounds great, but it's nothing more than censorship wrapped up in the pretext of protecting you from damages. Oh, these damages. What a bunch of crap. And I'm serious. If I really think that this whole fake news narrative that has been created was created and designed specifically for censorship purposes. And I had a chance to speak with Malik Jones today, and that's one thing that we talked about. And the purveyor, as you said, Joe, of fake news was and is the government. Mm-hmm. Because look what they did with Pizzagate. Look how they framed that. And here's another thing. If you go on the internet and you look up Pizzagate theory, find it on Wikipedia. I haven't looked here recently, so it could have changed. I'd be surprised if it did, but what does it say?
Let me look.
It's a conspiracy theory. Unfounded, unproven, made up by idiots, basically. Really, no. Let me just say this on a lighter note.
Yep. First thing that comes up, Pizzagate conspiracy theory.
Yeah, there it is, right? But on a lighter note, folks, have you taken care of your beautiful wife, your mother, your aunt, your sister? Have you taken care of that significant other for Valentine's Day? Are you tired of guessing what she wants for Valentine's Day? Wouldn't you love an easy, fail-proof way to look like a pro this year? Guys, I already took care of my wife. I got her flowers for Valentine's Day. They're just not here yet. You see, this is the beautiful thing about Pro Flowers. You can get it on their website and order them in advance and select the delivery date. Folks, go to proflowers.com. Use our code word Hagmann in the mic box, H-A-G-M-A-N-N. But here's an even better deal. To our listeners only and viewers only, go to HagmannReport.com. Click on the banner, on the link, that banner for Hagmann Report, Pro Flowers at HagmannReport.com. Click on that. It'll take you to our own URL at ProFlowers. They set us up nice. Then put in Hagman code, and you're going to see all sorts of great deals. On top of their already low prices right now, you can get 24 assorted roses with a free glass vase for $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Or you can upgrade for just $10 more. This is the greatest deal. This right here. $10 more. You can get 24 long stem assorted roses with a premium vase and chocolate. So spend the extra $10. It's worth it. Just go to proflowers.com. Use our code Hagman. Help support our show by supporting our sponsors. Use our code Hagman at proflowers.com. You can pick up your flowers or pick your flowers and then check out in under 2 minutes or 2 minutes or less. And I've done it and I love it. It's simple. It's easy. Here's the only way to get 24 assorted roses with a free glass vase starting at $29.99, but I would upgrade to the $10.99 with $9.99 more upgrade, and get, an extra, you get 24 long stem roses and a premium vase and chocolates. Just go to proflowers.com. Use our code word Hagman. Help support our show by supporting our sponsors. Use our code Hagman. That's proflowers.com. Click on the microphone and type in Hagman. That's all. Don't wait. Order today. This deal does expire soon. I'm going to tell you that before we got going here. And I just, but Joe, oh, you know what? Coming up, we've got,
Melissa Odin.
Oh, wow.
From Survivor's Guilt to Forgiveness and Abortion Survivor's Intimate Story of Suffering, Guilt, yeah. Grace, and Reconciliation.
I watched your testimony in front of Congress today.
Yeah, John sent that over. We're going to talk about that as well as, the testimony from Melissa Odin and what she is doing today.
Yeah.
So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We've got a wonderful treat for you. My goodness. We've got a lady, a young woman, who is not supposed to be here. Not, meaning not this show, but is not supposed to be alive today. Her name is Melissa Odin. And she has got a heart-wrenching, informational, inspirational story to tell you about. And you know, we often talk about books on this broadcast. We do. I got an email the other day. It was over the weekend saying, "You're the best book salesman." Yeah, it's all you do is talk about books. Well, this one in particular is one that will touch your heart and inform you and inspire you and make you understand that you are here, that God gave you life for a reason. You will never look at your life in the same way again. It's called You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir. And the author is just a wonderful, wonderful lady that I don't know personally, but I do know through her congressional testimony. And she's with us right now. Before we get to her, folks, Sherry's Berries. I can't wait to tell you that we're going to be announcing this here in the next day or so. Sherry's Berries gave us this, is allowing us to participate to give you free certificates, like $50 gift certificates of Sherry's Berries, through a contest that we're going to run. I can't wait to tell you more about it, more about that, probably tomorrow. Oh, I asked them, I said, can you give our audience something? And Sherry's Berries, of course, they stepped up and said, absolutely. Your audience, absolutely. But folks, Sherry's Berries, if you go to berries.com, that's berries.com, they have gifts like no other for you, your loved one, whatever. There's no one like your Valentine. You know that. This year, treat them to an unforgettable gift that's unique, as unique as they are. And last show we showed a box of Sherry's Berries, but right now, with Valentine's Day around the corner, there's only one way to get Sherry's Berries, starting at $19.99. Just visit berries.com. That's berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner and type in Hagman. That's Hagmann. Sherry's Berries at berries. It's berries.com. Type in the code word Hagman. More on that later. Joe?
Yeah, our guest for the next 90 minutes is Melissa Odin. And want to give a quick thanks to Karen Campbell from Karen Campbell Media for setting this up. Melissa Odin is an author, a Christian motivational speaker who founded the Abortion Survivors Network and speaks nationwide. She has a book, You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir, that was just released on January 9th, 2017. Melissa, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And
your story's been gaining a lot of traction as of late. From what John said, that it really took off on social media. And it's great to have you on the show. We're looking forward to hearing your testimony and your story. Where would you like to start tonight?
Oh, you guys decide. I could talk forever, trust me.
Well, we understand you were 14 when you learned that you were an abortion survivor. Now, you were born in, I think, what, 1977, correct?
Mm-hmm.
August of 1977. Why don't we start in August of 1977? Why don't we start with what happened there? That's when I heard your congressional testimony, I thought I believe everyone needs to hear that, but you lay it all out for us.
Yeah, and, you know, in reality, even though people thought that congressional testimony was very powerful, which, you know, it was, I told you earlier, right, it was the grace of God, but the long version of the story is what I wish Congress could hear. And so my story started 39 years ago in a little town in Iowa called Sioux City. And what I know now was that my birth mother was actually forced against her will to undergo a saline infusion abortion. And that type of procedure was the most common one back in the 1970s. It actually involved injecting a toxic salt solution into the amniotic fluid surrounding the preborn baby in the womb. And the intent of that toxic salt solution was to poison the child, and it would burn away the top layer of skin, and ultimately that child, of course, would be killed in the womb, and then premature labor would be induced with the intent of that deceased child being delivered. And usually that would happen within about 72 hours. So that procedure was forced upon my biological mother. I was subjected to that toxic salt solution, but my medical records actually indicate that I didn't soak in that toxic salt solution for just 72 hours. They actually indicate that I soaked in it for 5. They tried numerous times over those 5 days to induce my birth mother's labor with me. And I often joke, I'm really stubborn. I wasn't going anywhere quickly. But as much as I can joke about that, you know, the reality is I was subjected to that solution even longer. And on that 5th day, they finally succeeded, induced her labor at St. Luke's Hospital in Sioux City, Iowa, believing that I would be this quote-unquote successful abortion. And lo and behold, I was born alive. That's what many people in the abortion industry call a dreaded complication.
But, a dreaded complication, go figure. The birth of a living human being, dreaded complication. Okay, but it didn't stop there. This nightmare, unfortunately, didn't stop there.
Yeah, it keeps on going, right? So I know now that the person who actually forced the abortion on my birth mother was actually a member of my family. It was my maternal grandmother. She was a nurse, a prominent one in the community. And so with the help of the local abortionist, they forced this abortion upon my birth mother. And didn't believe, of course, right, that anybody would ever find out what they did to her, and they would most certainly never find out about me. And so, you know, here I was delivered alive, and you know, unfortunately, my grandmother was there when I was delivered, and she is the very person who actually demanded that I be left in that room to die. You know, we hear about things like this still happening today, that abortionists or nurses are there when children like me are born alive, and those children are left to die, or demands are made that that's what should happen. And in my case, it just happened to be my grandmother. And just actually, when I was finishing the book, what I actually learned is that there was a nurse who rushed me from that room to the neonatal intensive care unit, because in her words, she said she was gasping for breath, and I was not going to leave her there to die. And so that nurse rushed me off to the NICU, believing that maybe if other people found out that the abortion had failed and I was alive, then maybe, just maybe, they would provide that medical care to me that sustained my life. And that's why I'm here today, because those nurses did their job that day. They provided medical care to me, and it sustained my life.
I don't know how far I can go and we can go in questions, but did that... Okay, so...
You can ask me just about anything, I like to think.
Okay. So, all right. You were... to be aborted in August of 77, they injected saline into your mother's womb, expecting you to be aborted. What month? I mean, were you full term at that point, or?
That's a very good question. So, on my medical records, the abortionist actually indicated that he thought she was about 20 weeks pregnant with me. But the fact that I was able to live and I weighed almost 3 pounds, I was 2 pounds 14 ounces. When I was delivered, actually makes it pretty clear she was much further along in her pregnancy than what the abortionist indicated. And in my medical records, one of the first notations by a neonatologist after I survived was that I looked like I was about 31 weeks gestational age.
Oh, wow. So was that a mistake, or was that a misrepresentation on the medical records initially?
I don't know that I'll never know the answer. You know, I don't think I'll ever know the answer to that. But what I do know is that God knew the truth.
That's right. Yeah.
God knew the truth.
Okay. So, all right. So you were supposed to be aborted. Hence, you were, well, nonetheless, you were born by the grace of God, and praise God. And the nurses there rescued you, but the one nurse that was there wanted to just leave you. To die?
Well, and you may remember from my congressional testimony, you know, I actually know where children like me were placed at that hospital. You know, my adoptive parents had heard some rumblings over the years, and, you know, we try not to think about it, right? Because it's really terrible to think about. But I met a nurse just a few years ago, actually, when I was speaking somewhere, and she was just sobbing when she came up and spoke with me, and she was apologizing, and And I said, you know, you don't need to apologize. And she said, but I do. She said, I delivered a little boy a year before you in the same type of abortion procedure. And he was born alive also. But she said, instead of providing him medical care, I did what my superior told me to do. And that was to put him in a bucket of formaldehyde in the utility closet. And she would, they would write the baby's name on that bucket, and they would leave the baby there until their life had ended. And then they would be picked up later, and disposed of as medical waste. So that was meant to be my fate.
Okay.
That day.
All right. I'm sorry if this, if anything, this is kind of,
this is what I do.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I'd have, seriously, I don't know if I'd have your courage to talk about this. Wow. All right. So you go through your childhood. At what point do you find out, and how do you find out?
Yeah, under what?
That you survived the abortion.
I'm trying to think of the circumstances that you.
Right. How do you go about having this conversation, right?
Yeah. You're in a coffee shop one day and bam, you know?
Yeah, I can joke about it now, right? Because as you can probably guess, I get a lot of questions from people as I, you know, I travel around the world, and it's inevitably, are you flying for business or pleasure? And I kind of go, both. And then you wait for people to ask more questions, right? So yeah, it's hard to strike up the conversation, but what happened actually is that I was adopted not long after I survived, and so grew up knowing I was adopted, never questioned that, had any concerns about it. You know, my parents did this amazing job of helping my older sister, who's also adopted, helping us know that adoption meant that we were loved, and not just by them, but by our biological parents. You know, that was a gift that they gave us, our family, when they couldn't care for us. And so, you know, that was, life was a blessing to me. And it wasn't until I was 14 years old that the truth about my survival came to light. But it was only through a very unplanned set of circumstances. My older sister, as a high school student, faced an unplanned pregnancy. And even though we were raised in a home with very strong faith and very clear beliefs about abortion and adoption, my sister was contemplating what all of her options were at the time. And, you know, I'm so thankful that no matter how scared she was, she ultimately told our parents that she was pregnant and considering options. And, you know, our parents felt called by God to tell her the story of my survival, hoping that she would understand just how deep of a decision she was facing. And so it was after my sister found out the story of my survival that she let it slip to me during an argument. She didn't know that I didn't know. And so she actually said to me, you know, Melissa, at least my biological parents wanted me.
Ooh.
And I thought, really low blow, right?
Wow.
Yeah, it was epic.
Oh.
And so, you know, that night I actually turned around to say something back to her because I was so hurt. And when I went to say something back to her, though, the look on her face really just fell. And that's when she figured out that I didn't know. And so she just said that night, she actually said that. She said, you don't know, do you? And I kept saying, know what? I mean, what am I supposed to know? And she said, oh, wait up for mom and dad tonight and ask them to tell you the truth, and you will see. And so I did. I waited up that night, and it was actually our mom that came in, and I told her about the argument and, you know, was fully expecting to just get in trouble for arguing the way that we were. And instead, the conversation took this really huge turn because in the midst of really hours-long conversation, my mom finally spoke the words. She said, Missy, your biological mother had an abortion during her pregnancy with you, and you survived it.
Gracious.
That was devastating.
Yeah. Eric the Tech, We're sending out Melissa Sherry's Berries and Pro Flowers just because, man, I'm telling you, seriously. Wow. Okay, so, all right.
What are some of the emotions that came when you found out the truth about your past?
Well, I think if you can feel every human feeling at once, you know, I felt them that night. I was angry. You know, I've never felt anger towards my biological parents before because, yeah, I was raised to love them and respect them. for what they did for me. And so that night really changed it initially for me, because I couldn't understand how anybody could make that kind of decision about my life. You know, the good news is I didn't stay angry for very long, because my faith has made it possible for me to know that I have nothing to be angry about. But I did. I felt anger that night, and I was scared. You know, I didn't know who I was anymore. Here I was 14. I was just trying to figure out who I was in the first place. Man. And then to find out that I had this other story to my life, and I felt very alone. I felt very ashamed and embarrassed, because even though things have changed a lot in our culture, gratefully, you know, back then, a lot of people said things like, well, it's just a clump of tissue, it's a blob of cells, it doesn't have a soul yet. And we still hear the, well, it's a woman's choice, it's a right. You know, we hear all of those things. And so here I was, 14 years old, trying to process all of this. And all of those perceptions of other people weighed very heavily on me. I feel guilty for surviving. You know, I spent years of my life questioning why God spared my life. And why I'm perfectly healthy today. The doctors didn't initially believe that I would live for very long.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What kind of effects? I mean, again, I don't...
It's okay.
Because the saline is supposed to burn
me
alive.
You said 72 hours, but you were there for 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, typically if you Google it, and I always have to warn people, like, be warned that you will come across some images that you won't forget. You often hear children like me called red-skinned or candy-apple babies, because that toxic salt solution would turn the skin bright red as it peeled it away and moved internally into the organs. You know, you can see pictures of babies with blackened, mottled skin because of what the toxic solution did. And I've heard horror stories from way too many medical professionals about the children like me after the abortion procedure. So, you know, miraculously, I was not scalded. And there is no medical reason why I wasn't scalded. There is no medical reason why anybody like me exists. You know, I was just actually talking to a nurse since the book has been published. She read the book and said, Melissa, I've been following you for a while, and I thought I knew who you were, and I know now that it's you. She was in the NICU the day that the door came flying open, and that nurse rushed me in. And the words out of that other nurse's mouth who rescued me, you know, she said, that blankety-blank Dr. Kellberg messed up.
Oh. Oh.
And that's... Hey, that's okay. You know what? That was their medical perception, right? That he messed up, that he made some kind of mistake, and that's why I was alive. And like I said, I can't explain it. I don't know it. But that nurse told me just recently, she said, we used to stare at you in the NICU and just say what a miracle you were. I struggled initially. I suffered from seizures, respiratory, liver problems, the doctors thought I might be blind, that I would suffer from multiple emotional or mental disabilities. But by the time I was 5 years old, I had a clean bill of health.
That's by the grace of God, and obviously a strong-willed woman. my goodness, and beautiful, if I might add. There's, you know, if I'm allowed, am I allowed to say that, or can I get in trouble with like one of the regulatory agencies? Melissa Oden is our guest. Her book. Folks, you got to get this. It's just a wonderful, just a wonderful tale. You carry an account, not a tale. You carried me, a daughter's memoir. It's supposed to be aborted. And wow, my goodness!
And check out Melissa's website, melissaohden.com, melissaoden.com.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, so wow, so many places to go from here, and so many questions. So at 14 you found out the truth, and that's an incredible story by itself. Like, can you imagine just that, the whole process, and learning the circumstances of your birth and that you survived?
Yeah, how did that affect your teenage years?
Yeah, I had to blow your, well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are headed on the right path. Yes, it blew my world apart. You know, when I talk about it in the book, I went into it probably in deeper detail than I ever have before, of course, because this is a very personal look at my life. But, you know, I was kind of the perfect kid growing up, and my parents still say that. Like, you were the perfect kid. I was on the outside. You know, I was the kid who was always hardworking, got straight A's, you know, was in extracurriculars, held down a job, helped took care of siblings, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was the perfect kid. But what people didn't know is that all the while I was in so much pain after I found out about my survival. You know, I struggled with alcohol abuse, poor relationships. I developed an eating disorder because I desperately wanted to control something, right? Even because I couldn't control my past, and so I tried to control something else. And I know that most people can never understand what it's like to be in my shoes, but I think a lot of people know what it's like to go through something really painful, especially in such a very important time of growing up. And so I struggled in a huge way. And, you know, the reality is that I think, you know, the Lord blessed me with a pretty clear head to know that all of those choices I was making were not helping me. They were making my life much more difficult, and it was getting kind of hard to keep it under wraps. And so, you know, thankfully, my faith really allowed me the opportunity to realize that, you know, I don't have to run from myself. I don't have to run from myself. God didn't make any mistakes with me, and He doesn't with anybody else. And that I have a family who loves me. And that no matter how hard it was, you know, years ago, I first forgave my biological parents. I didn't know back then that the abortion was forced upon my birth mother. But what I did know in my heart is that their lives had to have been changed after that day. And so I forgave them. And really, you know, somebody brought this up to me the other day, and it really clicked with me. When I forgave them, that enabled me to heal myself. And I think that's an important point for a lot of people.
Wow. And to me, that would be so difficult for forgiveness, but I think you're right. How reassuring or I'm tongue-tied because, you know, you think about that to me, it's an act of murder, but I can almost understand the being cornered in that position and having to, I feel bad for your birth mother, certainly.
We were all victims. We were all victims.
Yeah.
And I think what we don't hear about in our culture, and this was important to me long before I found out that my birth mother was forced. You know, I didn't find that out until about 4 years ago. But long before that, I started really advocating not just for children like me, but for women like my biological mother. And the Elliott Institute has a statistic that tells us that over 64% of women, 64%, identify feeling pressured into their abortion.
Wow.
That's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, I never knew that statistic. 64% feel pressured. 64.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What I would tell you is in the circumstances, you know, when I meet and talk with women or when people are reaching out to me on social media, I would tell you that the number of women that I hear from who say that they were coerced or even forced into their abortion is probably even higher than that.
That's an amazing statistic. Melissa, hold on right there if you don't mind. We're going to come right back to you, folks. Well, our guest is Melissa Oden. Visit her website, which is in the description part on our program. What an amazing account. What an amazing story. Her grab a hold of her book, of course, You Carried Me, subtitled A Daughter's Memoir. Grab a hold of her book. It's an amazing tale. You can watch on video her appearance in front of Congress giving her testimony. But before we get back to her, guys, Valentine's Day, not too far away. You can give a gift like no other for your loved one who's like no other. And certainly our guest tonight is like no other, believe me. How would you like to have, guys, for your special lady, freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries? They start right at $19.99 plus shipping, or you can double the berries for just $10 more. go to berries.com. That's berries.com, B-E-R-R-I-E-S, and use our code Hagman to help support our show. By supporting our sponsors, use our code word Hagman. You know, these berries are the best. We got a box the other day. Joe, you had some. Eric, I think you were sniffing around. And anyway, they're fresh, they're sweet, they're shareable, they're irresistible. You can choose your different, how they're dipped and tempting milk and dark chocolate. They're chocolate chips, others with nuts, decorative swizzles. They're just beautiful. They're gorgeous. They're delicious. With Valentine's Day right around the corner, right now, there's only one way to get Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99. Just visit berries.com, B-E-R-R-I-E-S.com, and click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner. Type in Hagman. That's berries.com. Use our code word Hagman. Help support our show by supporting our sponsors. Use our code word Hagman. We're talking with Melissa Oden, and we're going to be back with her on the other side of the break. Folks, what an amazing woman. God doesn't make any mistakes, right? And certainly not with Melissa Oden. In fact, Melissa Oden, we're so fortunate to have her. What a miracle. And Joe, who we got to thank?
Karen Campbell Media.
KarenCampbellMedia.com. God bless you. Thank you for giving us the gift of Melissa Oden tonight. Folks, we're right back. Stay right where you're at because it's getting good. Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water. But a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Perhaps you're a business out there, a small business. Would you like to extend the reach of your business? I bet you would. Would you like to have the same opportunities as companies such as Omaha Steaks and Pro Flowers and Casper Mattress and some of the bigger companies out there? Would you like to have that same power? Advertise on our program. Go to HagmanandHagman.com or send an email to opportunities@HagmanandHagman.com. If you go to HagmanReport.com and HagmanandHagman.com, there's a link where you can, it's a big red box. You'll see it. Click on that link. And go ahead and read the benefits we have created for you. I think it's a fabulous opportunity.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com.